We're joined now by the head coach of the Cornell men's lacrosse team, Peter Milliman. Of course, the Big Red season coming to an end because of COVID-19. The latest rankings coming out, the final rankings, the Big Red finishing number 2 in the polls. Peter, first off, and most importantly, how are you and your family doing right now with all that's going on?
We're doing well. Thanks for asking.
Good.
We're spending time at the house and trying to follow some directions that are given to us, and getting a little stir crazy at times, but getting us to spend some quality time on a daily basis, which is great.
That's awesome. Let's talk shop a little bit, because there was something special clearly brewing with this lacrosse team. And I think for the media, some uncertainty of what to expect during the preseason. But you rose through the rankings. The offense was brilliant. The defense was strong. The X had improved. Chase was great in the pipes. Do you feel like you started the season with a bit of a chip on your shoulder, though, to prove people that you belonged in the national conversation?
I would say we started the season with a need to prove to ourselves a bit more that we could play better lacrosse than we did last year. You know, we year in and year out since I've been there have been I would say up and down a little bit. And the last 2 years as the head coach, I don't think last year was necessarily a down year, but it wasn't a great one. And it looked like we were maybe building off of what we had done the year before. And I think that as an inexperienced coach kind of got to us a little bit too much in how we plan things. And this year it was really just making sure that our guys understood that, we need to be better on a daily basis and we needed to challenge each other more. And so there was definitely a chip, so to speak, but I don't think it had anything to do with the perception. I think the guys on the team have a pretty good confidence that, you know, we can compete with whoever we're playing as long as we're playing as hard as we can. And as long as we're doing that on a daily basis, we're gonna improve, and we're gonna see some development as a group. And there was some guys that have been a part of the games for a while. This is a senior class that has a lot of experience. A lot of these guys were in the lineup as freshmen and sophomores, and I got junior class that a lot of them have been playing since they were freshmen. So there's a lot of experience on this roster, and it just became so clear that we can't rely on that as much as we can attack it and find a way to get better and just attack complacency and attack that mentality of being a good lacrosse team. We didn't have any interest in being a good lacrosse team. It just didn't serve a purpose for us.
So you kind of alluded to it. You had to prove it to yourself. Is that something that started from the top and then trickled on down, starting with you and your assistants and everything like that? Or is that something that you simply just told the players, hey, you guys are good, let's show everybody? I mean, can you describe a little bit more what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think it certainly started with the coaching staff. We do a preseason, even a before the year, retreat. We just kind of hold ourselves up for a few days and throw everything at the wall we can think of and rewrite our systems and our culture packet and everything that we're, going to try to do with the team this year. And it was just one of those things that just became such a recurring theme that, we weren't pushing the guys, and then they weren't pushing each other as much as we needed to get where we wanted to be. We're a pretty good team. The recruiting has come together. The lineup is solid. We've got some experience, like I said, but it was really about, that desire and that drive for guys to just never be satisfied. And, honestly, we started maybe talking about it like it was a little bit more of a desperation. Like if our guys aren't desperate on a daily basis, then we're not pushing them hard enough. If they're not, really putting themselves out there so much that, it's a risk, physically and emotionally, then, we're not pushing them hard enough. If we're not, on the borderline of having some blowouts and some fistfights in practice, then you're really just not pushing them that hard. And other than that, nothing else really mattered to us, because the X's and the O's will figure themselves out if your guys are playing hard enough. If it was a different dynamic of a team and it was we still needed to teach guys how to play and figure out who can compete here and there. Like, there's not a whole lot of openings in our lineup coming into this year. And so it was pretty clear that it really just had to be about, you know, what were we willing to do to be successful? And we had some pretty intense practices even before we started. I mean, just our conditioning, and we were getting pretty cutthroat there for a while. And even to the point where I had the captains come sit with me and we're like, "Coach, how far are we going to push this? Because this is starting to really take a toll. I'm not sure the environment in the locker room is that great right now." But you know, to my point, if there wasn't a little bit desperate, if guys weren't really considering, how much more they had in the, to take of it, then I don't think we were pushing them hard enough. And I think we found that line pretty quickly.
Yeah. Peter Milliman, head coach of the Cornell Big Red, joining us here on BTL, the Big Red men's lacrosse team, finishing 5-0 on the season. What made this team so good?
It's a pretty good combination. I think there's some great senior leadership. I think a lot of what we worked on early on in the season, and developing that intensity and that that environment every day in practice. I think my staff has done an outstanding job of simplifying systems and allowing the lacrosse to be in their hands and not ours, and driving the right guys the right way, and watching a team grow together. I mean, it's about, each individual group when they come together, what's the best version of that, and how do you get to it? It's not about getting to it at the beginning of the year. It's not about, figuring out who fits in the lineup the first week of the season. It's really about, what's this team capable of when they're at full capacity, and, how do you get them there? And so, we were just in the beginning stages of our season, so who knows what we, would have ultimately been able to accomplish. But I think it was a group that was coming together the right way and working for the right things. And I think because of that unified mentality that, was driven by the captains and the coaching staff, that those guys were, they were competing. They were competing as hard as anybody in every game we played. I mean, we were out playing teams in some capacity, but we were mostly just out working them. And that was a big part of the design.
It feels like months ago at this point, but it was just 10 days ago, literally just 10 days ago. I can't believe it, but you were supposed to host Yale at Sholkoff for what would have been a heavyweight battle. But of course, we learned that the Ivy League would cancel the rest of the spring sports season before that game. Can you take me through the timeline a little bit, if you can recall it, how you found out this was happening, or when you found out, and how you broke the news to your team?
Sure. There were some rumors swirling around even before that weekend when we played Penn State, just about, things possibly getting more severe. Nobody understood how severe, what the potential of it could actually be. We returned from Charlotte, where we played Penn State. We got back late Sunday night. We took Monday off. Tuesday, we got together for a quick lift and started to strategize for the weekend. And that's the first time I got the hints that there's going to be some changes, made by the league, made by the NCAA, whoever, but that they weren't going to be that severe. At first, it was, they're going to restrict attendance. They're going to start, changing the way we're traveling or this and that. And so that was, I think, Tuesday. And then Wednesday, we had a meeting, and it was one of those, you get an email and it says, we need all the coaches, to meet in the meeting room in 20 minutes. And, it, right there, you get that ominous feeling like this is, that's not how you usually set up meetings. And when we got there, that it was told to us directly. It was told to us pretty cut and dry. The Ivy League has decided that they're going to cancel the rest of the competition for spring sports. And, we don't have a whole lot of information for you past that. And so it's a room of all the coaches of these teams. And, we're kind of reeling, figuring out what, how we take that, how we direct our thoughts. And then immediately the next phase is like, all right, how do we tell our teams? And so I called a team meeting pretty quickly. And, those are really, there's no preparation for a meeting like that. I mean, there's no way of, handing out that information. It's just, it's something I've never done, something I never, you know, would like to do again. It is as difficult of a team meeting as you can have, because it immediately sunk into me after I was told that we are going to have to cancel the season, that regardless of what may potentially happen, regardless of what the, you know, workarounds or whatever we can come up with, there are guys that are in that room who have put on the jersey and have represented Cornell for the last time. And there's no other scenario that is as impactful as that one. That one, it's even for guys that don't play on game day, it's a really, really big deal to them because of how hard they work and how much they care about being a part of something bigger than themselves. And to tell them that they're done with it and they didn't get, you know, a senior day. They didn't get to, you know, I don't know, experience a full season, see the career of what they've been doing for 4 years come together with their best friends, and how, you know, the dream that they, every freshman class comes together and talks about, when we're seniors, we're going to be, you know, this and that, we're going to work every day to get good. But by the time we're senior, you get to that point and then it's just taken away from you, whether you're a guy in the starting lineup or not. It's devastating. And that was a challenge to have that conversation, and it was emotional. And the absolute hardest part about it is telling them that, you know, your season is over, and I don't know anything else, and I don't know when I will know anything else. And you're pretty helpless in that position, and it's not a fun one.
And man, and the fact that it's out of your control and it's just snatched away from you. And I just can't imagine what that part of it is like. You mentioned how it was an emotional conversation. Do you remember any bits and pieces? Are you willing to share any bits and pieces of what you told your players?
It was very cut and dry in my delivery because of the potential of it getting emotional from, sure, even from my side.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I didn't want to walk them through different scenarios. I didn't want to get, you know, overly dramatic about it. I didn't want, you know, it was very raw, and it was probably most important that the news is delivered to them. And you know, we pass along a mentality and a directive as to what we're doing now, but it is pretty clear that this is where we're at. Like, there's no going back on it. This is indefinite. This is definitely the end of this 2020 season. Keep some perspective, because this is obviously done for a reason. We cannot feel like we're victims at this. This is something that is done because there's obviously a greater risk and something much bigger than what we're talking about in this room here that's forcing these decisions. So keep the mentality. Don't, you know, this is not a time to complain or to, you know, point fingers or anything. Just respect that this is the way it is, and we've got to figure out what's next. And I think they understood that. I think they got it quickly. And as hard as it is to accept, it's the reality, you know what I mean? And the next phase of that is that the message kept changing every day. You know, I mean, I was planning on sending emails out to parents and alums to notify them, and literally on a daily basis, the narrative was changing on us. And so I kept writing emails and deleting them before I even got a chance to send them. And when you're in that room talking to the team, you know, we were on the front line of it. You know, the Ivy League canceled it right away.
Right.
So the hardest thing to accept is that you're the only ones, that you may have just canceled their season, and then you're going to watch, you know, the ACC and the Big Ten and whoever else compete for the national championship. And, you know, that perspective changes quickly when you realize it's escalating, and the scenario is changing the way everybody in this country is dealing with it. And so the devastation that you feel the first day, it doesn't subside because of, you know, it doesn't make you feel better that other people are having the same, you know, dramatic conversation, but it makes you feel like you're not, you know, alone in this, and that, you know, it wasn't just done to you. It's, you know, a little bit more eye opening when you realize that this is a bigger scale than we even understand.
We're chatting with Peter Milliman, head coach of the number two Cornell men's lacrosse team here on BTL, the Big Red finishing the season 5-0. You know, at this point, we do know that NCAA Division I schools plan to reserve an additional year of eligibility for athletes who are a part of spring sports. And as we know, the Ivy League often does things differently than many conferences. From what you know, what can you share about what we may see with regards to the Ancient Eight? Will the league allow an additional year of eligibility?
It's still too early to know that answer. Yeah. I mean, there are possibilities that guys, will be able to compete this last year of their eligibility, but there's no blanket answer for how that's going to work out. And the Ivy League has, some pretty specific rules set up to prioritize the experience for the young men the young men and women. And they're pretty consistent with their theme. They don't change it much for, different scenarios. And I don't know how this is going to affect it, but, you know, we're hopeful. It sounds like the NCAA is going to, make it work for the guys that want to. And, we're hopeful that the Ivy League institutions will be able to support that, but, we don't know anything just yet.
Yeah. And, I hate to think about it and be blunt, but guys like Jeff Teat or Cooper Telesco or Connor Fletcher, it just feels weird that they would get such an important season snatched away from them because of something that's out of their control. And frankly, if the Ivy doesn't accept or rework its eligibility rules, I think a lot of people would hate seeing them in Syracuse Orange or Tar Heel Blue or playing at UVA. Is there a way for you and the other Ivy coaches to be able to sway the decision makers in this so it doesn't happen and they get to stay at home?
I would love to think that there is,
yeah.
And we're working on it. I'm just not sure how much of a difference our opinions are going to make to the administration, but I think they respect it and they understand it. I really don't let my brain wrap itself around any of the guys that you just mentioned wearing any of the colors you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Those guys are Big Red lacrosse players. I don't think they can imagine seeing themselves on a different team. And we're just, we're hopeful that things are going to work out. So,
yeah.
It's certainly a big part of what we're focusing on right now. Everybody's off from school for a little bit, and we're as an administration, as a staff, and as a athletic department, just trying to figure these things out. It just takes a little bit of time. Obviously, everybody's dealing with other things, so we need to be respectful of that. But I am hopeful that these things will work. I'm not sure the Ivy League cares if I give them my opinion, but hopefully, if enough coaches are rallying around this, because at the end of the day, and this is the simplest way to say it, at the end of the day, we want to do what's best for the athletes, for the young men and women. It's really just about what's the right thing, and if it's better off that these guys just move on and accept the fate of what's happened because of worldwide pandemic, then that's it. I don't think that's the end of the story, and I'd hope to think that that's not something that we're going to consider, but it's out of our hands. So
you mentioned that the Ivy was so good at lacrosse. Do you feel like it was the best conference of college lacrosse this past season?
I don't know. It's hard for me to jump into that answer. We've done pretty well. I mean, statistically, I think the Ivy League had a pretty impressive resume against non-conference, and specifically against the, I think ACC, we were undefeated. Against the Big Ten, we were, 7-2 or something like that. I mean, we had done pretty well as a conference. There are some other teams that, hadn't played probably as tough of a competition, and it's hard to really gauge how good those teams are because they looked really, really impressive. And, then there's other teams that are, starting with a bit stiffer of a competition, and their record doesn't reflect how good they actually are. And so you never know, but I think it was a really strong conference, as good as I've, this is my eighth year in the Ivy League. This is as good as I've ever seen it. I was excited for the possibility of, what we could do going forward. But, I was the week it happened was Yale week. And I was sitting up on Friday night and thinking about, tomorrow is supposed to be the Yale game. It's supposed to be the biggest game we've played at home in a while. And, it was hard not to kind of sit with that one for a little while. But, you know, again, as I'm trying to teach the boys, like, you know, the perspective on what's going on here has to be greater than, you know, your desire to play. I know everybody wants to get on the field and play. We want to compete. We want to, you know, do those things. But, reality is it's just not the possibility right now.
Yeah. And sometimes things are bigger than the game. And one of those mm-hmm. things before we let you run is, you know, Jim Case. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention his sudden passing on the 14th, just 55 years old. I mean, he was such a staple to your program and to local sports. I mentioned before we came on the air, when I was calling high school basketball here, I'd see him at so many games refereeing. He'd come right up to us just to say a quick hello during a quick timeout. And there were some really incredible photos on the team Twitter account with, it looked like him with you at your wedding, maybe a photo mm-hmm. of you guys with former coaches, Jeff Tambroni and Ben DeLuca. I mean, it's clear he was such a special person who meant so much to you and to the program and to the lacrosse community here in Ithaca.
Yeah. There's really no way of summarizing that in any short time frame. Jimmy is as big of a part of this program as anybody has been for the duration. I mean, he was the trainer with Richie Moran for a few years. He's been consistently with these teams every year since that. He's been a part of so many guys' lives, so many families' lives. He's just always been everybody's version of like the best all around guy. He just, everybody loves him. I mean, I just having a conversation with his wife the other day. She's like, it was crazy walking around town with him. He was like the unofficial mayor of town because you couldn't go anywhere. He'd stop to talk to everybody and everybody was so chummy with him and he was so friendly and it's just who he was, you know? I mean, I didn't know until we're at the services last week that he was that into reffing basketball and some of his friends were talking about how actually good he was at it. And like, he did it basically to fill the time between football season and lacrosse season. And every year he was probably one of the best refs and would have gone on to ref in the playoffs and the tournaments, but he had to start lacrosse season and didn't have the ability. He just liked doing it. He liked giving up his time. He liked being a part of people's lives and he liked, giving himself to opportunities like that. He liked being selfless and being supportive, and he's intertwined in every part of our program right now. And you know, he was on the field with George Boyardi when he passed, and he's been a really incredible contributor and supporter of our program. His family has. He's just the amount of people that reached out to me and wanted to pass on some words and some thoughts. And like, I didn't know how many people he actually knew. And I see him every day and I didn't realize how close he was with different people and how much, you know, time he gave up and, you know, the things that he would do, to be supportive. He would go out of his way to, you know, if somebody needed a ride to the Syracuse airport at 5 a.m., he'd show up at your door with a coffee in his hand and happily give you a ride. So you didn't have to pay a taxi. And it seems kind of, you know, far-fetched somebody would be like that as consistently as it was, but I can tell you that it finding out this much more about him after he passed and you really start to understand how amazing of a person he was and what a difficult loss this has been.
Yeah, that's a great tribute to him. And Peter, I appreciate your openness. I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate the couple of minutes you've spent with us here today. And, you know, stay safe out there. Really, you know, hoping everything works out for everybody, obviously. But again, thank you so much for the time. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.